future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
We're so glad you've stopped by. Welcome to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. Come indulge with us in the next hour as we explore a region of the world, its wine and spirits. We'll also talk about food, tours, and other amenities unique to this area. Sit back and enjoy. Now, here's Kimber Stonehouse.
Well, hello, and welcome to Around the World in a Glass. We're here on one of your Wine Wednesdays yet again. Last week was fantastic. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I really loved talking about it. It was one of those things that I had to do a little reading, delve in a little bit more, and remember some things that I had learned but maybe hadn't used for a while. And really loved talking about Germany. Talking about Germany in depth and how far north it was and how cold the estates were and how, which I as I read some of it, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember reading that before. How all the vineyards are so steep. And I knew they had to be all hand harvested, picked, pruned, all that kind of thing, all had to happen by hand. There was no, they don't have a machine that'll, you know, like a lawnmower here in the States, but they don't have a machine that would go through and, take care of that land on a 70% incline. 70%, all right? Think about it. Vertical is 90, all right? That's really steep, you know, and I'd forgotten they were quite that steep. I knew they were really steep, but I had forgotten they were quite that steep. And just the hand harvesting that goes into it and the fact that the grapes will barely even ripen. And some of the other amazing things that I found out while I was reading and then some things that I shared last week about how to find the good ones. So if you're, you know, rolling your eyes saying, come on, Kimber, get off the Riesling kick, you know, they're good. And they go so fantastic with food. We didn't even get into last week how amazing they paired with food. I kind of threw that out right at the end that, hey, yeah, and by the way, these are really good with food. They're just an amazing white wine that when you do them, they pair well with the food. And, you know, there's no, it's just, there's some of the best wines out there. Some of the best white wines in the world are some of these good German quality wines with the Prädikat. All right, so I talked about all that last week. Make sure you go back and listen. This week, because I'm going to be in France here soon, wanted to talk about France. I know. I talk about France all the time, huh? I'm sorry. But what I'd like to do is kind of talk about some of those regions maybe I haven't covered before or that don't quite get as much press or don't quite make as much wine. Okay, so I thought we would just kind of ramble around France a bit. We're not going to talk about Bordeaux, not going to talk about Burgundy, we're not going to talk about the Rhone, which is really hard for me because that's absolutely one of my favorites. Probably not going to talk much about Loire because we covered that when we covered Sauvignon Blanc a few weeks back. So, you know, if you're looking for those regions, I've covered them. I spent January, I think I spent 2 weeks covering Northern Rhone and then Southern Rhone. And there's a wealth of information there and some amazing wines to drink and to go look for, if you can even find some of them. Inexpensive as well as, oh, holy cow, that's pricey. All right. So, you know, the sky's the limit. Whatever your budget says, that's what you can drink for Northern and Southern Rhone. Germany also had those options. If we're looking, other French wines we've talked about, I spent some time, I know, talking about Bordeaux in the past and Burgundy. I'm sure I've spent time talking about Burgundy because I quite like Burgundy. My budget doesn't like Burgundy or Bordeaux, but I quite like both of them. So since I just thought it'd be kind of cool to reach out for some of those other regions. You know, smaller, less expensive. Other things that the French do that they do so very well. The French has been probably the top producing country for wine, undisputed for ever. You know, I think as far as quantity goes, sometimes they flip spaces with Italy. Sometimes they flip spaces, I know, with Argentina. But Argentina used to drink it all as opposed to export it. That's been changing in the last several years with Argentina. But, you know, so France has kind of been the top quality producer, though, for a really long time. All right. There are other top quality producers now, but France has, I believe, the longest longevity, the longevity of doing that. They've been doing that since well before the 20th century. They have been a quality producer. Napoleon set up his Bordeaux growth, his first growth Bordeaux and the Bordeaux classification system in 1855. All right, so for the big symposium thing they were having there, he wanted the wines to be judged based on their price point and their quality and that kind of thing. So he made them come up with a classification system in 1855. So France has been paying attention to that quality pretty much 100% of the time since then. All right, yeah, I'm sure you can get a bad bottle of French wine. I've had one before. But, you know, they have a lot of standards they have to jump through. I got to be honest, I'm not somebody who always likes to follow all the rules. I kind of like to be free to do my own thing sometimes. And I would have a hard time being a winemaker in France because they have to grow what they're told to grow in that region. And if they don't want it to just say table wine on the label, they got to follow all the rules. And then many times, depending on which level you're at, they require either every year or every so many years that a panel come in and taste your wine after it's processed and before it's bottled, because they want to know what you're putting in that bottle and if it's the quality it's supposed to be for all the things you have on your label. Okay, so depending on the region, okay, it varies per region. So again, I don't think I'd want to grow wine there, but they make amazing wine. And we're going to talk about some of those regions just a little off the beaten path, okay, unless you spend a lot of time in France. None of these are on the places that I'm going. None of them. So there's an entire show's worth of wine regions, and I'm going to spend 10, 11 days in France, and I'm not going to any of these. I mean, unless I get lost. These are not on the plan. One of the biggest, and one of the ones for some really great bang for your buck, is the Languedoc-Roussillon, okay? Languedoc-Roussillon. All right, and this one, I can't believe I haven't talked about it, because these wines here really wasn't a well-known region until probably the last 10, 15, 20 years maybe, somewhere in 1990s, 1980s, somewhere in there, they started really to make a name for themselves. Before that, they were just a whole lot of table wine, okay? Not necessarily bad wine, probably some really good wine. It's one of the largest grape-growing regions in France. Yeah, I know. I'm reading this and I'm like, are you kidding me? How did I ever forget that place? How did we not talk about this already? They're also known as being the capital of mussels, you know, and not M-U-S- C-L-E-S, not the kind that, you know, Iron Man has, but, you know, the kind you eat, M-U-S-S-E-L-S, mussels. They're known as being kind of a capital of that, and their wines pair well with that. They grow a little bit of everything there. Okay, that was another thing that was kind of surprising me. I'd forgotten this as well. And I've had many, many wines from this region because it's usually good bang for your buck, by the way. To me, these are it's kind of like the Southern Rhone area, just really good bang for your buck. For whites, they grow all kinds of stuff. They do Chenin Blanc and Chardonnay and Muscat and Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier. So pretty much, you know, everything that they grow in Rhone for the most part. And then for the reds, they grow, you know, your standard, you know, the ones I would expect. Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, of course, because they're a southern area. It's going to be warm. These are warm weather grapes, warm climate grapes. But also Carignan, Cinsault, which I have a love-hate relationship with Cinsault. Sometimes I love it, and sometimes I really do hate it because it really doesn't taste very good. And then Cabernet, which was kind of a surprise, and Merlot. So those are kind of the newcomers to the area. The others are all kind of the things they've been growing there forever. These wines, they have a whole bunch of different regions, and we're going to talk about a couple of the regions because they have a standout, all right? But if you're looking for good bang for your buck, something between $10 and $15, you can almost always find a Languedoc-Roussillon wine that is going to hit your budget, okay? They're going to be in the different type bottles, so sometimes they're going to be in the Syrah kind of burgundy kind of bottle. Sometimes, you know, the one that's kind of fat, doesn't fit in the wine rack sometimes, or, you know, the tall, skinny bottle like a Bordeaux bottle. Okay, they're going to be in either one of those, depending on what grapes are in it. Unlike other areas of France, here's another thing to screw up. As just when you thought, you know what, Kimber, you've given me enough, I can navigate France. If it says Rhone, I know what it means. If it says Bordeaux, I know what it means. If it says Burgundy, I know what's in it, if it's red or white. I'm sorry, Languedoc doesn't follow these rules. Nope. Sometimes if it's an AOC wine, it will say its region. Okay? Sometimes, if it's not an AOC wine, it's just from that area, it'll just tell you the grape that's in there, or the grapes that are in there, which is kind of convenient for us Americans, because I'm told, as a country, that we're really bad at geography. I don't know. My geography happens to be very good, but that's also, I travel a lot. I travel for pleasure now, but my parents growing up took us on vacations where we traveled in the States. And then since I've gotten to be an adult, I really love to travel. It's where I spend all my money, is traveling and on things to travel with, like suitcases and other dive equipment and cameras and things like that. So it's just one of those things. I love to travel and go see the rest of the world, domestically as well as internationally. It's just something I love to do. So a decent geography. But, you know, when you get to talking about, you know, where wine's grown, the climate really makes the big difference. All right, so these are the Languedoc Roussillon wines are going to be grown southern area. And they're going to be, you know, kind of a little bit of everything grown there. And then sometimes they're going to say what's in it. So you don't have to know your geography if you don't want to, because it's going to say Cabernet Merlot. Okay, that was pretty clear, you know, or it's going to say Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon or whatever the grapes are inside. These grapes, they're just, I consider these to be quaffable wines. You know, they're good. They're inexpensive most of the time. There's going to be some pricey ones. Don't get me wrong. But it's also known as the La Madie, I'm putting the emphasis in the wrong spot. La Madie. I don't know. It means the midday sun, the land of the midday sun, because it's very bright there. It's very nice. It's very warm. Unlike where we talked about last week of Germany, where it was really, really cold. They kind of speculate a little bit about this being kind of started out by the Romans, but it was huge. 70,000 plus acres of vineyards, I believe is what it said in the book. I was going to see if I could find it for you real quick, because I was stunned. I didn't realize it was that big. You know, and I drank a lot of wine from that region. I must have known it at some point, but you know, you forget things after a while when you don't use it all the time, right? Anyway, it's a huge, huge, huge region. And it's down around the Mediterranean area and all that. So if you're looking for a good wine that's a little bit off the beaten path, but not expensive, try to get one of those dry wines from the Languedoc area. They do some other amazingly good things in the Languedoc. They have some sweet wines or sweet fortified wines. I haven't seen any of those here. They call them Vin du Naturels, all right? And if I don't know these wines. So they sound fantastic. So if you have the opportunity to find a sweet fortified wine called Vin du Naturel from the Languedoc region, please tell me how amazing it is, and email me and let me know how good that is, because I have not had that opportunity at all. They've got some places here, some Pink Saint Loup, some Fortant de France. That one's a good one. I've had some of the Fortant wines. Some of these wines that are in this book I've not seen before, but that is part of the hazards of living in Phoenix. We don't get a lot of French wine here. So I have had many Languedoc wines. I just haven't had some of the bigger name ones that they mention in a couple of my books. So I'm tossing those out because they might be something that you can find, and then you could email me and tell me about them, because they're just not wines that we get here in Phoenix. Another area then, if you get down, one of my favorites. All right, we're going to move on to a favorite. I like the Languedoc Roussillon wines. One of my favorites, those in Provence. I really like the wines from Provence. There's several different wines from Provence, and this is one of my very favorite areas. It's going to be, if you go down there, it's a southeast little corner of France, okay? If you go any farther south, it's going to be in the French Riviera, all right? You've got a couple of different regions that fall into Provence. One is Bandol. Another one is Côte de Provence, Côte d'Ivoire, Provence, and I'm so sorry, my French is really not very good. So those are a couple of the areas that I want to mention, because these are some of my favorites. Some of the red grapes that are grown there are going to be Grenache and Cinsault. All right. Again, I like Cinsault better when it's blended with other things. And then when you get to looking at the soil and the climate there, because it's dry and hot and humid, you know, it's kind of dry and humid at the same time. How does that work? But the only two things I could figure will ever grow there are grapevines and olives. And I'm like, I read that this week, and I'm like, that is the place for me. I love wine, and I love olives. Those are two of my favorite things. I'm like, all righty, I think it's time to move to Provence. Some amazing things that you know about Provence, this beautiful little area that a lot of I've never been. I've been told that it's just flat amazing to sit in the French Riviera area and Provence and just enjoy wine and olives and garlic aioli and all of those things. And it's just something I haven't had the opportunity to do yet, and it's not going to happen this time either. But when I think Provence, I just think rosé. All right, when people tell me, oh, yeah, I want to sit and drink some wine in Provence, it just sparks the whole concept for me of rosé. And that is not all they do there. All right, there are other things that they do there. But that is what it means to me, as just amazing rosé. There's a couple of different regions. I mentioned Bandol. I mentioned the one that's named after Provence area, Côte d'Aix Provence, which is like the little area around the town. And again, the wine is often overshadowed by the food in this region, because most people, when they think of Provence, they think about the food. And for me, I just think about rosé, because the rosés are so flat amazing. They're going to be elegant. They're going to have really good flavor. They're going to be kind of a salmon-y color, for at least most of the time. And they are just, you know, kind of like Riesling is in Germany. They have some beautiful elegance. Bandol is one of my favorites. Bandol is one of the regions in Provence, and there's a couple of big producers. It's not very big. It's a fairly small little area. They tend to do various things. The grape in Bandol, I believe, is Mourvèdre. Primarily Mourvèdre. And these wines are just flat amazing. Domaine Tempier is one of the, it's a small producer, It's maybe bigger, like a cooperative. Anyway, none of these places are big. We don't get a lot of Bandol Tempier. We don't get a lot from Domaine Tempier. They do some reds that are knock your socks off reds. They are big, they're huge, they have a ton of aging potential, they have high acid, they're just fantastic every time. I would say that they need time, and we've had some single vineyards. They're not cheap. The regular reds are going to cost you about $60. The single vineyards are going to cost somewhere between $80 and up, depending on the vineyard that you get them from for Domaine Tempier. They also do a rosé. It's $40 on the shelf, so it is not a rosé for the faint-hearted. I usually spend about $12 to $15 on my rosé, just, you know, for comparison. But this rosé is, it's amazing. It's elegant. It's beautiful. It's everything a rosé should be. There's something about French rosé that, you know, even though there's some that I like that are domestic, there's a couple from Argentina that I like. I like some of them. You know, I mean, I like rosé from other places too. But there's an elegance that comes from the French. And I think it's partly the way they process, because they do more of a hands-off processing. They don't try to do too much in the winery. They try to just let the soil speak through and let the grape and the grapevine speak through to what they're doing. And so the wines often have a sense of place, a terroir, right? We've used that word before. But then not only that, there's an elegance in their processing, so they don't over-process. They don't press the grapes too long so that they get bitter. They don't try to milk out every little bitty piece of juice so that, you know, what you end up with in the end is maybe a substandard product or something that they've worked too hard at. They've over-extracted, they've over-pressed, they've over-manipulated. So what you really get with most French wines, especially when you get into the more expensive French wines, is just this elegance that comes through and a beauty of being unadulterated, unaltered. And I really quite like that. When we come back from break, we're going to talk a little bit more about some Provence wines, a couple of other leading producers, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about a few other areas that I really quite like in France that are not as well known. They're a little off the beaten path. You have to work to get there. All right, we'll be right back in just a few.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
There are people that are sometimes labeled to be ones who spread conspiracy theories. The truth is, many of these so-called theories are based in actual reality. Despite this, so many people feel powerless to do anything about the flaws and injustices in governments and corporations. Listen for Real Conspiracies with Scientific and Spiritual Solutions with host Dr. Robert Newton and co-host Lele Nehruz. Tune into this empowering program every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, we're talking about those random regions of France today, those ones that sometimes get lost in the shuffle and get lost in the bigger regions or the more popular regions of Burgundy, Rhone, and Bordeaux, and even Loire. Loire is another big area. Notice that we call most of those by their rivers. Pretty cool, right? I mean, the Rhone is based around the Rhone River. And Loire is that whole region there with Sancerre and Pont-l'Évêque and Quincy. That whole section there is also based around a river. And Bordeaux is based around a town. Okay, so that one's a little different, but I think there's also a river there. It's just not called Bordeaux. Alrighty, so anyway, we're not talking about those big regions and those regions we've talked about on several different occasions. I kind of went and I found some little areas that we don't always talk about that kind of get lost in the shuffle because they don't do a ton of grapes. I know here in Arizona, they're not readily available. Some of them are price prohibitive because by the time they come into the States and get all the way across to Arizona, they're, you know, $40. And that's not my favorite place to drink any wine. My favorite place to buy and drink wine is about 15 to 25 so that I can just buy and drink more. And $40, that means that's one bottle every other week, for my poor little budget. So, anyway, we talked a little bit about Provence, and Bandol and some of that, and we've still got a little bit more there to cover. Bandol is Morvedre. I ran back and looked it up real quick in the break to make sure I didn't misspeak in that first set, that I didn't misspeak the grape that is there. I've always thought it was Morvedre, but just every once in a while, you kind of second-guess yourself, right? But they aren't known for their rosés, which is what I have loved and had probably the most opportunity with, is that beautiful rosé done by Domaine Tempier. They are actually more known for their robust and off the deep end red wines that are just spicy and leathery, and you know you put them in your mouth and you're like, oh my gosh, this flavor goes on forever, you know, because there's just so much structure and so many layers, and then as they age, they just get better because they've got good bracing acidity like any other fantastic French wine. They've got that acidity. And as they age, the flavors just become more integrated. So instead of being like, oh yeah, there's the fruit, ooh, there's the zip, there's the spice, there's this, and oh my god, some acidity, you get more of an evenness across the palate. So you kind of move through from the beginning all the way through. The wine just kind of, you've got all the secondary flavors come forward and the acidity's tamed just a little bit. So what you get is just this amazing structure that just continues to go and go and go across the palate. So leather, spice, you know, sometimes some wild herbiness, you know, sometimes you're going to get, for me, I get almost a wildness that is personified through the flavor profile. Just a little, not rusticity like I would get with a Malbec, but just a little, like an Argentine Malbec has that rusticity. This is kind of a wildness, a something that just doesn't quite seem tame. So they're really good. They're fantastic with fatty foods. You can put them with lamb, and I think that's a popular way to serve it in Bandol, but I could be mistaken having not been there. Not to mention I don't eat lamb. But I think they would also go fantastic with steak. They're going to go fantastic with, you know, fatty cheeses. Anything that's got a lot of richness and a lot of fattiness, whatever that might be. You know, that kind of big spicy bold red is going to go well with. And we're not talking spicy Australian style, okay? Because those have a lot of fruit and a lot of spice too, but it's just different. It's just a different type of spicy. So not necessarily a black pepper spicy, but more like an herbal kind of spicy. It's different and robust and rich and flavorful. So those are definitely something to check out, those wines from Bandol. There's another brand that's recently come into the Phoenix market. It's a Kermit Lynch bottling of Bandol, and it is good. It runs about $40 instead of $65 or $70 for a red. I do not remember the winery name. I just know I've had it twice or three times in the last 6 months, and I was stunned at how good it was. It was just really a quality wine for in that $40 price instead of in that $65 to $75 price where Domaine Tempier usually is. So this is a less expensive Bandol. Really good quality. A hint more approachable than the Tempier. The Tempier being just something that you need to decant and maybe leave open for a little bit before you start to have it for dinner. The Kermit Lynch one is just a hint more approachable, so you don't have to have quite that time. It could age, but it doesn't need quite the decanting time that the Tempier would need. All right, moving on, I talked briefly about Côte de Provence. And these, again, some fantastic rosés. They do other things too, but I know these from rosés. So they've got some big reds that are red, and then, of course, the rosés. Of course, everywhere I read, it says rosé in my book. They've got one area because it gets so hot. The limestone soils outside of Provence, the limestone soils and the hot days are perfect for red grapes, right? But not necessarily Cabernet, because Cabernet and Merlot are a little far, they're happier, a little cooler climate. But they do like the heat, but they don't mind it if it's a hint cooler. So the best wines are, and this one area, that's what I was going to tell you, this one area surrounding this little valley is known as Val, I can't say it in French, it means the Valley of Hell. So apparently it's hot there. So some of the best wines that are coming out of them are made from Syrah, Cinsault, Mourvèdre, Grenache. And believe it or not, they've actually planted some Cabernet there that's doing fairly well, even though it's technically not a Mediterranean grape. And it's really rare in Provence and Rhone. Really, it's further north. That's where you see it, is in Bordeaux and further north, primarily in Bordeaux, actually, because you don't see it in Burgundy, because that's Pinot. So, yeah, primarily in Bordeaux is where you see most of your Cab Merlot, Malbec, Petit Verdot, Cabernet Franc. And here they've got some Cab Sauv floating around down there in that Provence area down by the French Riviera, where it's nice and warm. Some of the foods that you think about these wines, I mentioned lamb and things like that. They're really big on aiolis and things like that, with a lot of garlic, homemade with garlicky, homemade and with mayonnaise is an aioli. Bouillabaisse, which is a fantastic saffron-infused style fish, basic fish stew kind of thing. Some of the other things that they eat there, they're going to have tapenades, that sort of thing. Ratatouille, which I love ratatouille if it's done well. So very good. So a lot of things like that that just, you know, come out of the water. They're right there near the water. So a lot of fish and fish-based dishes. And then other things that are made with a lot of herbs and a lot of locally grown herbs and vegetables and things like that. As I was reading, I found one that I was unfamiliar with. So I'm going to attempt to tell you today about this other area of Provence that I've never had the opportunity to have wine from. So while I'm in France, I'm going to see if I can't find a bottle of this somewhere, because I'm not going to Provence, so I'm hoping it'll be somewhere in France besides Provence, so that I can try this. It's called Cassis. And you're like, oh, Kimber, I know what Cassis is. I already know this deal. Well, it's not the black currant liqueur that is so fantastic, all right? I know what that is. I know Cassis in that vein. I know what that is because it's very, very good. Trust me, I know what that one is. This is a white wine. It's in this region. It's called Cassis, and it's a white wine. And it was also, not only that, it was made from a grape I have never had, Clairette, C-L-A-I-R-E-T-T-E. And, of course, Marzahn. Marzahn is not always a favorite of mine, but I think it's because it's paired with Roussanne, which is really not a favorite of mine. I think Marzahn often gets looped into there, and I just don't like either one very well. So this is a wine I've never had. It's just a few miles. This Cassis area is a little fishing village just a few miles of Marseille. Okay? So I don't know. It's supposed to be a light, crisp, dry white. It's supposed to go fantastic with fish and that sort of thing. And then they also do in that same area some reds and rosés from Mourvèdre and Grenache. So there you go. Think about those crisp, dry whites with that claret and Marzahn going with, you know, a fish and aioli. That just sounds fantastic, you know, and it just sounds really good to me. I don't know. Call me odd, but that, I think, sounds fantastic. So though that's an area that I've never had the opportunity to have a wine from. I assume it's a small area. It reads like it's a small area. It says fewer than 400 acres, a small fishing village, right? 400 acres is not very big. So that's another one down there in the Provence area, right down there in southeastern France, right, you know, knocking on the door of the French Riviera, that I've just not had a wine from. And I just thought it was kind of, I thought I'd toss that out there to you guys, and you guys can let me know if you've had one and how good they are. And after I go to France, I'll tell you if I had one and how good it was. Maybe I'll pick the right one. There's some wineries there. We've talked about a few of them, Domaine Tempier for Bandol. It's got one listed here from Cassis, but I have no idea. Clos Saint Magdalene? There you go. If you can find one from that winery, there you go. That'd be one to go check out. I am quite curious about that region. All right, another area. We just tasted one of these yesterday. We're tasting for the new wine list. So yesterday, my couple of new hires, two of them had been through this before, where they knew what to expect when you start tasting for a wine list. They'd both had a lot of restaurant experience. And so they understood that when you start talking about tasting for a wine list, it's going to be a palate exhaustion kind of thing. We taste as many as 100 to 130 wines for each wine list that we roll out. All right. And we put 75 on by the glass. Some of those have already been selected. Some of them will come from our tasting, and others of them will come from proposals of things that we're already familiar with. Well, you can imagine for a new hire to walk in and expect yesterday to taste 30 wines in about a 2-hour time span. It was a huge education. It was just a huge education. I had told her before we got started, I'm like, you know, Nancy, and she's doing awesome, by the way, as someone who doesn't come from a big, long wine background, just an avid interest, but not a lot of actual experience in tasting and evaluating wines like that. I had told her yesterday before we got started, and even last week, I said, when we start tasting for the wine list, you are going to learn so much. I said, because it's just, you know, the way we do it, and I don't know if everybody does it, we just sit around and we taste and spit, because you can't drink these or you're going to be drunk before we get through, you know, glass number 5. So we taste and spit, and then we evaluate the wines out loud as we taste them as a group. So there'll be 3 or 4 of us together, and we will take a sip, swish, spit, and then we will start to discuss the wine. This is flabby. This is no acidity. What's the cost on this? That's way too much money. You know, and we just kind of talk about the wine. And so here's someone who's new to the environment, and, you know, it was a fantastic experience for her yesterday, because all of a sudden those words that we toss around, and then you try to tell her what you're describing. So, like, if I tell you that a wine is flabby, like, what in the world does that mean? Well, it means it doesn't have a lot of acidity, and it has a whole lot of fruit up front, but not a lot of structure. Okay? Well, that's really kind of complex to figure out how that comes across on your palate. But yesterday, she's tasting the same wine, and two of us look at each other and say, you know, this is kind of flabby. There's no acidity here. And all of a sudden, you could see the light bulb go on of, I got it. I understand what that means all of a sudden. You know, so yesterday in our tasting, we tasted one from this next region. And it's just, we don't get many wines from this region, so I was kind of excited. It's the same one that's been on the shelf before and been on the wine list a couple years back. But it's from Cahors, and I know I'm probably not saying that correctly. It's C-A-H-O-R-S, okay? And ours was a red, and the primary grape in this region is Malbec. Yes, Malbec. And then there's another grape that grows there, because we have people call and ask for this one. They grow some Merlot. Merlot and Malbec are often found together, but Malbec is the primary grape. And then the second, one of the other grapes is Merlot. And then this other grape grows there, and we have people that call and ask for this one all the time, and it is a pain. You can always tell when somebody's studying for a psalm test or studying and just reading a book, because all of a sudden they start looking for Tanat. And you're like, ugh, I just want to scream when somebody calls and asks me for Tanat, especially before I found any. I've found one or two now in the market, so it's not so bad. But, I mean, we have scraped the barrel looking for this particular grape from the Cahors region of France. And, you know, and you just get so darn frustrated because, you know, you're trying to help customer, right? We have a couple of wines that are just really hard to get here in Phoenix, and it's because they're not popular, and so nobody brings them in. Well, this one, we like it. But it's one of the few. And actually, this one from Cahors doesn't have any Tanat in it. We looked yesterday to find out. There's no Tanat. It's Malbec and Merlot. Like, oh, crap. But label is really kind of old. It's called Clos de Cahors or something like that. Clos de Cahors? I think that's right, yeah. And, you know, it's not expensive. It's under $20. It might even be under $15. So it's not an expensive wine. And it's just got some of that rusticity and attitude you'd expect from an Argentine here coming out of France. All right, we are going to head to break real quick, and I'm going to come back and tell you a little bit more about tasting that Tanat. Well, that Tanat that wasn't from Cahors. We'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Do the adventures of Indiana Jones leave you curious about this exotic and unusual profession? If so, don't miss Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology with Dr. Joseph Schuldenrein. You'll learn about forensics, ancient civilizations, and human origins. Listen to Dr. Schuldenrein and colleagues discuss their excavations and related archaeological topics, ranging from the unique to the sublime, and yes, even the mundane. Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology, live Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
How do you know if you're living with an addict? If you think you know all the recognizable signs, you probably don't. If you're listening to and reading from the so-called experts, you probably don't. You need to hear from a parent, just like yourself, who has been there and can tell you what it's like firsthand. Please listen to Afflicted by Addiction with Bradley DeHaven. Our program is heard every Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. It just might save your life or the life of someone you love. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, we were talking just before the break about this little region called Cahors, Cahors, and this it's southwest France. Okay, so before we were over southeast France, Languedoc, Roussillon, Provence, all that jazz. Now we've moved over kind of southwest France. All right, what is over there? You think? Well, besides Spain. Anyway, so you get over toward that area of southwest France, and you're just south of Armagnac and Cognac and Bordeaux, all right? So you kind of get a little farther over, and your Cahors region is going to be a little farther southwest of France over there. So Malbec is the king in that area. And these wines, though, you know, unlike the ones in Argentina that have that big fruit, rusticity, kind of Malbec, kind of Merlot with attitude is how I like to classify them. The ones in Cahors still have some attitude, don't get me wrong. And you can still tell it's Malbec or Merlot and Tanat. But it's different. It's got some really some focus on where it was grown and the climate there and the way, and you know, it's going to be another hot area, maybe not as much moisture, okay? Because remember, Malbec is a Merlot, kind of like it a little warmer, but not as warm as, say, Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, Cinsault. So they don't mind it warm, but they don't want it quite that warm. So they, you know, they're going to go over here where maybe it's a little drier, and maybe it's a little more landlocked, okay? And maybe a hint cooler because there's not all that beautiful heat coming off the Mediterranean. So, and the foods are going to be bigger, Right. Remember that, you know, when some of these grapes were planted and it figured out where things grew well and how things happened, like in Champagne with, you know, the high acid grapes that they eventually learned to make into what we now know as Champagne. You know, they kind of were doing things that fit the region. So if you were a cooler climate like Alsace, well, then you grow more Riesling and Gewurztraminer and things like that, and a lot less things like, you know, Syrah, Grenache, and Mourvèdre that like it to be really warm and sunny and hot. All right? And Burgundy, you know, they fell in love with the heartbreak grape, the Pinot Noir, but they kind of, you know, started all that long before we had wine classifications and laws to tell us what to grow wherever. I mean, they've been doing these grapes and things. They've been doing them since, you know, 200, 300, 400 years ago. All right. So what they did was they planted the grapes that made sense with the kind of food they ate. And it kind of just happened kind of a little naturally. You know, I like to eat this and this and this because they taste good together. And this grape grows well here. So, you know, things that, there's a philosophy in the foodie world that things that grow in the same region taste good together. Okay, so think about that. So things that grow together are going to complement each other when you cook them. Okay, so wine, say, well, let's take Italy, for example. They're known for several things, right? Pasta. Wine, olives, and then wheat. I don't know how you classify that because that'd be pasta. You make the pasta. But wine and olives and, you know, artichokes, things like this, they all go really well together. Almonds, nuts, things like that that are grown in Italy, they all go very well together. You look at things, look at regions of France that are really famous for, you know, lamb and Syrah. And lamb and Syrah happen to go very well together. You know, so it's a way of thinking. There's a whole foodie movement on the way of thinking like that, and that when you pair foods together with you know, to figure out how to season or how to make the lamb, you use herbs that would grow where that particular sheep was grown. You know, those things go well together. They grow together. They have the same climate. They like the same type of soils. That way they're going to complement one another on the plate, or they're going to complement one another in the same dish. So there's a whole foodie philosophy about that. So I think it works well with wine too, though. So you look at the style of food that you have, say a Provence that we were talking about earlier. It's very fish and stew and herb-based, right? They're right there on the coast, right? Saint-Tropez is there. Marseille is there. I mean, it's, hello, the French Riviera. Woo-hoo, right? So when you look at what they eat there, the wines that they have there complement that food, complement their climate. Provence and Rosé complement, you know, the big enough body to go with those foods, but at the same time, cold and elegant enough to complement those foods. So not to overpower one another. And I think that holds true through a lot of regions. So whether they, you know, figured out the food first and then added the wine, I think it was kind of something that we could use that word that's already overused. It's kind of organic. They kind of happen simultaneously. And again, they kind of followed that policy because, you know what? You're not going to grow Syrah in Alsace. It's just not going to thrive there. It's cold. And Syrah wants to be hot and sunny. And Alsace is cold and steep vineyards. And, you know, it's not all that different than some places in Germany. That's why they grow some of the same grapes. Cold there, you know. So your food is different, and how you pair it with the wine is different. So anyway, just a thought. Check that out. It's kind of an interesting concept that your food and your wine reflect one another. Now, when I was talking about a region earlier, when I was talking about Provence, no, actually, it's even worse than that. The very first region I talked about, Languedoc. I forgot one of my favorite wines because I always forget it's from Languedoc, Roussillon. Because it's just such an individual thing. I always forget that that's where it's from. It's called Banyuls. Banyuls. Okay? And I love this bottle of wine. They're really hard to find. The only one I've ever had is done by Chapoutier. It's about, I don't know, 30, 35 bucks. And it, 30, 35 bucks. And it's, a sweet. It's a sweet wine. It's a 500 mil, so it's not a full-size bottle. It's two-thirds, 750, 500, And then a half bottle is usually 375. So it's a little more than three quarters, I guess, is the way to say that. Where we buy it here in the States, that's how it comes. It is a sweet fortified wine. I like to use it when people that come in and they need something for a dessert, but they're not necessarily port fans, or last year we used a port, or year before we used a Madeira, and the port really doesn't suit. So depending on their dessert, okay, because sometimes port is the best answer, all right, for a dessert wine. Sometimes Moscato d'Asti is the best answer. Other times, Madeira or sherry, or in the one case recently, the Banyuls was the best answer. It was a, let me see if I can remember it right, because it's been about a year. It was a chocolate cake with some kind of fruit. I want to say raspberry. Could have been black cherry or something. But it was some kind of a dense chocolate cake with this kind of a fruit-based on the red fruit, so raspberry, cherry kind of thing, that it was going on with it. Like sort of some kind of, I don't know what it was. I don't remember it being like raspberries on top. That's far too simplistic for this dessert. It was a really complex dessert. But those were the flavor profiles that I had to work with. And I was pairing it blind. I've never had the food. I'm pairing it blind based off a description from the chef. And I get to looking at it and I'm like, okay. And the year before for the same chef had done a different dinner with different pairings, of course. I didn't want to duplicate. So I didn't want to say, yeah, you need a Madeira for this and sell her the same Madeira that I wanted to, because Madeira wasn't right. Madeira was right, but I don't want to do the same thing 2 years in a row. Where's the fun in that? It's the same chef. Maybe not the same people, but the same chef. So I get to looking at it, and port's just not right. Not tawny, not ruby. Well, ruby just, it's not something I enjoy. And for this kind of a fancy dinner, what it was an auctioned off training session and dinner with the local chef that was really good. And we were picking the wines to go with the entrees she was going to make. All right, so we get the descriptions of the entrees, and then you pick the wine to go with it, and we had a budget to stay in. So, you know, when you're looking at wine for eight people and you've got less than $200 for a five-course meal, you kind of really got to make it go where it goes. It's kind of hard to, you know, stay in that tight of a budget for that many people and make sure you got really good bang for your buck, because they're eating some nice food and they've paid a fortune for this auctioned off dinner and experience. So I get to looking at it and finally I'm like, you know what? We got a bottle of Banyuls over here. I'm going to get the Banyuls because it just is perfect. And it was. It was absolutely perfect. I think it was the one that shocked them the most at the dinner. One of the ones that shocked them the most was that pairing with the Banyuls, because she was unfamiliar with all the wines I had picked, and that she had never even heard of, the chef that was doing the dinner. And I got her congratulations and her compliments after that as well. Find a bottle. It's going to have some fruit notes on it. It is not going to taste like port. It is an amazing dessert wine. It is fortified, I believe. So that means that they add in the grape spirits to it to make it a little stronger alcohol. So it is going to be closer to like 16-18% is usually where that is. But the wine was just flat fantastic. I was stunned with the first time I ever had it. And I've had it on a couple of occasions. And like I said, the only one I've ever had has been the one by Chapoutier. And it's just, every time I have it, I'm stunned at how good it is. All right, so there you go. There's another one to throw in your little plan there. Another place that I want to mention, the wines are hard, and I've only had like two. Both of them have been good. But I want to mention another area that is technically, it is French. And it gets forgotten about. And from what I understand, at least here in Arizona, because again, we don't always get everything from the East Coast area, there aren't that many wines that are starting to, they're starting to export a little bit more. There aren't that many available. But from Corsica, I had the opportunity to have two or three. I've had a couple of reds and a white. We have one right now that's on the bar from that area, and it's really good. It's lean. It's not overly fruity. By lean, I mean it's kind of, you know, got some good acidity along the jaw, and it's just, it's a little on the elegant side, but really bracing acidity, because you're like, whoa. But it is really, it's really very good. Very light in color, so it's a lighter style white, red, lighter style red. And the white I had was good. It wasn't, you know, wow, because it was by the same producer, and I really was wowed by the red. So sometimes when you have the white and the rosé later by the same producer, you're like, oh yeah, those are good. But wow, I really loved the red. So I've had all three by that one producer. They are relatively new in our market here. It's called Abitucci, And it's is the winery name, Abbatucci. Abbatucci or something like that. So I could be butchering it, and my apologies, but that's the best I can do with my limited French and Italian pronunciation guide. Anyway, one that I may or may not have mentioned when we were talking about Sauvignon Blanc, we talked about Loire. There's a little region in that area, because it really gets overlooked by Sancerre and Polyfume. There's a little region there called Quincy. And to us here in the States, it looks like Quincy, Q-U-I-N-C-Y, okay, Q-U-I-N-C-Y, Quincy. But it's actually pronounced, at least the customers who come in and say it, call it Quincy, okay? It's good. It's different. It's 100%. The ones I've had, let me rephrase, because I'm not positive that's all that's out there in that little bitty region, but it is going to be Sauvignon Blanc. And I don't believe I mentioned it the other day because I think I just forgot. There's only one or two that I've ever had. Again, I'm in Phoenix, and we don't get as much French wine here. But it was just, it was really nice. It didn't quite have the same style of minerality. It has minerality, just not the same style as what I love so much about Sancerre. The other thing is it's usually about $15 a bottle cheaper. So a Quincy usually isn't quite as expensive as a Sancerre. I've mixed emotions about that. I feel like sometimes that the region that's really, really good, I always want to know, is it because it's more expensive or is it because it really is that good? Sometimes I wonder if we aren't a little bit biased because of the price. I do know that I love Sancerre, though. Again, not a day to talk about Sancerre. All right, we have one more that I want to talk about real quick, and it actually is from the Southern Rhone area, and I just forgot to talk about it. It is Baume de Venise, B-E-A-U-M-E-D-E. And then Venise, V-E-N-I-S-E. And it is made from Muscat, okay, which is a grape. And these are a beautiful little sweet wine. They're harder than anything to find on the shelf, especially out here. I don't know how they are on the East Coast. I would assume, since it's a fairly small little bitty section of Rhone, they don't make very much. It is another sweet wine, but unlike the Bagnols, which is really rich and stands up to chocolate and cherries and raspberries and has a little hint of those flavors to go in it. I mean, when something complements, sometimes it has a similar flavor that kind of crosses over the line there. The Bagnols is still going to have some good acidity. That's why you can put it with chocolate. But the Baume de Venise is very different. It's just, it's a beautiful little white. It's not cloying, but it is going to be sweet, and no fizz. So you don't have the fizz like in Moscato d'Asti. The fizz sometimes helps balance out the sweet. You don't get that in a Baume de Venise. So that is one that I know every time I've mentioned Rhone, Southern Rhone specifically, I haven't mentioned that one because it's just one that I've had it like twice in all of my years because just it's just not very common out here in the West. And I got to be honest, it's hard to sell sweet wine. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't do sweet wine. And I just think they're missing out because some of the sweet wines are so flat amazing, whether you're talking Bagnols or whether you're thinking Baume de Venise or whether you're thinking, you know, a really lovely aged white Bordeaux, you know, the dessert wines and the Sauternes. Those are just so very beautiful. So I will probably spend more time talking about sweet wines again in the future. I know that we did a spot last fall where I spent a lot of time talking about port and sherry, Madeira, and the differences. And then I know I talked about Moscato d'Asti because it's one of my favorites to drink in the summer here in Phoenix because it has that fizz, and yet it's just nice and light and fruity and sweet on the palate. All right, so hopefully you got something out of my unknown regions of France. What I'd really like for you to do is go see if you can find them on your shelves at your favorite wine shop. Go ask for Cahors, see if they've got one. Run in and say, you know what I'd really like? A Bagnols. And see the response you get on that one. They are harder to find. Some of them are going to be expensive. Some of them are not. All right. None of these are really, really off the deep end unless you're looking at Domaine Tempier, Bandol, and single vineyard stuff, then you're looking at $100, all right? Some of the others, the rosé from Domaine Tempier, it's going to be expensive. If you're not a huge rosé fan, experiment with something else. Save that one for later once you get turned on to rosés. Because, you know, I want you to be able to try a lot of cool wine that we talk about here and not just buy one bottle for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. Might also try some of those cool things that I mentioned, the Languedoc-Roussillon. Look out for those because those are going to be awesome. All right. Well, hopefully that will give you a quick little tour around France. And if you get tired of listening to me talk about France, you can always go back and listen to me talk about Germany last week. All right. Until next week, try some French wine and have a great week. Cheers.
Thanks again for tuning in. Around the World in a Glass is heard every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Please join Kimber Stonehouse from Sportsman's Fine Wines and Spirits next week for another glass.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.